In the first hour of the program today, we'll be talking about campaign finance reform in Illinois. And we have as our guest someone who I think probably, at least as far as I know, has done more research on the subject of campaign finance in this state than anybody else. His name is Kent Redfield. He's professor of political studies at the University of Illinois at Springfield. And he's the author of a newly published book that looks at this subject, explores the influence that money can buy, and also makes some recommendations for reform. The title of his book is Money Counts, How Dollars Dominate Illinois Politics and What We Can Do About It. It's published by the Institute for Public Affairs at U of I Springfield. It's not terribly expensive if you're interested in reading on the issue. You can seek it out in a bookstore. Also, of course, as we talk this morning, you can call in and make your own comments and ask questions. All we ask of callers is that people try to be brief. We just ask that so we can accommodate as many different folks as possible and keep the show moving along. But, of course, anyone's welcome to call. If you're living here in Champaign-Urbana and listening here in Champaign-Urbana where we are, the number is 333-9455. Also, we have a toll-free line, so anywhere in the state of Illinois that you hear us, if it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free line and calls on us. That's 800-222-9455. Again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-WILL and toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Professor Redfield, hello.
Good morning.
Thanks for talking with us once again. I know that you've been following campaign spending in the state for some time now and have been tracking simply the, for example, have been tracking simply how much money is spent. And I know that every time we go through an election cycle, the dollars spent keep going up. How in the last election where we were electing members to the General Assembly, how much money was spent and how does that compare with previous years?
Well, we don't have a total across the whole election yet. Those reports are not due for another week. But we do know in terms of individual races. $850,000 was the old record for a House race. The two races in Champaign, probably both of them succeeded that old record. They weren't even close to being the most expensive House races last fall. Down in the 116th, the Reitz-Jankowski race, probably $1.2 million, and the Fowler-Gregg race down in the 118th exceeded $1 million. So for the first time in history, we had two candidates spend more than $1 million for a seat in the Illinois House.
That seems stunning to me, a stunning amount of money for a seat in a state legislature.
It really is, and a couple of things create that situation. First of all, because of the map, there are a limited number of competitive seats, so you can focus money if you're the leader of a political party or interested in who controls the legislature. Secondly, we have no limits, no rules on campaign finance in terms of who can contribute, how much. We have no limits on leaders raising money and then transferring it to another campaign. And so we will find that between 70 and in some cases 80% of that money came directly from the legislative leaders who raised contributions from groups that were interested in the legislative process or in control of the General Assembly, who contributed under rules that have no limits at all. So the fact that the Illinois campaign finance system allows that tremendous concentration of money. Similarly, we had a Supreme Court race in the 3rd District here across central Illinois where the two candidates spent about $1.2 million. And we had candidates up in Chicago and DuPage County for Supreme Court seats spending more than $1 million per candidate in some primary races up there. So the system, elections get more expensive every cycle, and it's a real troubling trend to see that judicial elections are starting to look more and more like any other partisan election.
And does most of that money go to buy television advertising?
It is probably a split in districts that you can do TV and direct mail. It is a pretty evenly balanced between those two things, TV and direct mail. And that, in fact, makes downstate races more expensive than races generally around the city of Chicago, because you can't do television if you're in a district that's close to the city of Chicago. You can't do it in a cost-effective way. Or certainly if you're sitting in a race in Champaign, there are probably at least two TV stations that you can advertise on. And in southern Illinois, unfortunately, some of those races, people were on St. Louis radio and St. Louis television. Not very cost-effective, but when no one's going to disarm unilaterally, and so when both sides get going, those things can happen.
Mm-hmm. We know that there is no guarantee that having a bottomless coffer for your campaign, there's no guarantee that you'll win. In fact, here in our area, we had two legislative races where the losers outspent the winners. Generally speaking, though, does the guy who has the person who has more money, will that person win?
Yeah, I when you get in these hyper competitive races, you really have passed a threshold. You know, there's a minimum amount you need to be competitive. But in most races, the person that spends the most money wins. Most races in Illinois are not competitive. Challengers really don't have anywhere near the resources you need to even get on the radar screen against incumbents.
Whenever we start talking about this subject, I'm sure one of the questions that comes up very early in the conversation is, for those people who contribute to candidates, what sort of influence, or does their contribution buy them any influence?
Well, people contribute for all kinds of reasons, obviously. I mean, sometimes it's just friendship. Sometimes it is because people think someone is a good person. John McCain raised a lot of money over the internet from people who were attracted to his campaign. But most of the time, people are interested in two things. They're either interested in access, in getting phone calls returned, meetings set up, you know, a place at the table, or they are interested in influence and control. The person I talked to, a lobbyist with the Illinois Manufacturers Association, they give close to $800,000 probably in the last cycle. And he says, you know, I'm only interested in one vote, that I support someone. All I want is that first vote where they organize the legislature. I want to have Republicans in control of the House and the Senate because they're going to be more friendly to our issues. So people give money because they care whether the Democrats or the Republicans win, but they also give money just because they want access. They want good things to happen, or they don't want bad things to happen. The beer distributors give a lot of money to both sides, and basically they just want to be left alone.
Who is it that who are the biggest givers to candidates in the state?
As individual groups, the Illinois Education Association and the State Medical Society, the Teachers Union, the Downstate Teachers Union primarily, and the Med Society are the two biggest contributors. We don't have, again, the new figures will probably reflect what it's been in the last couple of cycles. The teachers were up to $1.9 million, and the Med Society about $1.4 million. And then you've got hospitals, manufacturers associations, AFL-CIO, trial lawyers, the Illinois Federation of Teachers, the beer distributors, the bankers, cable TV. I mean, it is the usual suspects in terms of you will notice, you know, down that list, Ameritech. Corporations can give directly in Illinois. Commonwealth Edison is on that list of top 20. At the federal level, you can't contribute directly as a corporation, but in Illinois, you can.
Mm-hmm. These various organizations, the Teachers Union, the State Medical Society, the Manufacturers Association, the AFL-CIO, and so forth, are indeed organizations, and there I'm certain that within these organizations there are powerful individuals. But are there particular individuals where you would have to look at a contribution, and no matter what sort of name is on there as contributor, it may not be John Smith, but are there certain contributions that you can look at them and say, really what we're talking about here is a person who is giving this money?
Oh, sure. I mean, when we looked at the contributions involving the gambling bill that was passed in 99, Richard Duchossois owns Arlington International Racetrack, and when you look at contributions from him, from his family, from businesses he owns, from the racetrack, Arlington itself, $680,000 would have made him, would have been in the top five in terms of associations of giving money. All of that was aimed at getting a gambling bill that was favorable to Arlington, which was then subsequently sold at a very lucrative arrangement to Churchill Downs. And so, you track all of that money back, and it all came to one individual who had one specific piece of legislation in mind.
Hmm. Well, there is seemed to be a pretty clear example where, indeed, a piece of legislation that went through the General Assembly and that in one way or another affected the entire state, largely benefited one person and his interests. Is that common?
Well, it's not overwhelmingly common, but it happens with some regularity, and it is always possible within the system. So, the gambling bill obviously also helped the owners of riverboats because they now have dockside gambling, and it helped the people who had an interest in moving the license to the Chicago area and help the mayor of Rosemont if he eventually gets that license. But you can point to other examples. The Wirtz bill, which was a bill designed to protect the contracts of distributors of hard alcohol and wine, was a situation where a lot of money from Bill Wirtz's corporations came into the leaders over the last 3 or 4 years, and then a real heavy push during, again, the same session to get a bill that specifically protected that set of business interests. So it is a very wide open system. You can put a lot of money into it in a hurry. The Wirtz bill is caught up in the courts. The liquor manufacturers are not, are sitting there saying, okay, this may come back to the legislature. We better make sure our end of, we're representative. And so the United Vintners and Distributors, Distillers PAC put about $300,000 into the General Assembly and gubernatorial and the governor, constitutional officers in 99, the first half of 2000. So if you've got money, you can put, you can get a presence pretty quickly within the Illinois system.
I should introduce our guest for this hour. Once again, we're speaking with Kent Redfield. He's professor of political studies at University of Illinois at Springfield, and for some years now has been following campaign finance in the state. He's authored a book that looks at the topic. The title of his book is Money Counts, How Dollars Dominate Illinois Politics and What We Can Do About It. And the book is published by the Institute for Public Affairs at University of Illinois Springfield, where Professor Redfield teaches. And he's been with us before on the program to talk about this topic and has done a lot of talking about it, I know, around the state. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. We just a moment ago there, you were talking about what money can buy you if you're a big contributor. Maybe we can go on and talk about that a little bit further. You have a section in the book that looks at connections between money and policy. Is it possible to say not just that if I'm a campaign contributor and I give a lot of money, I can get legislation that will favor my interests, but can one go farther and in fact say perhaps there's a law that's bad law that actually gets passed, that not only are we favoring the interest of one individual, but somehow it's not really in the interest of your average Illinoisan, and that we can say that that follows from the fact that somebody who had a particular interest gave a lot of money?
Yeah, I think people with money and organization generally beat people who are not organized, who don't have money. And the classic example that's in the book has to do with buying cars. My daughter wanted to buy a car, and I wanted to go out on a weekend and buy a car. And I told her we had to go on Saturday. We couldn't go on Sunday. And she said, I got something else going on Saturday. Why can't we go on Sunday? And I said, because they're not open. And why aren't they open? Well, there's a state law that says you can't sell cars on Sunday. And what you have there is the Automobile Dealers Association saying, we don't want to be open on Sunday. We don't want to compete with each other or the mom and pop places. Let's pass a law that says you can't sell cars on Sunday. They came to the legislature. They're a top 30 contributor. They gave money. They had lobbyists. They were cared about the bill. The potential buyers of cars are not organized. And so, you know, for 20 years, we've had a law in Illinois, seems terribly anti-consumer. You can buy almost anything. The old joke is, you know, if you're going to drink and drive on Sunday, you probably should, you better already own a car, because you can certainly purchase alcohol, but you can't buy a car. So, I mean, that's in some sense mundane, but also I think illustrative example of the fact that organized interests, particularly organized interests with money, have a distinct advantage in the kind of system that we have in Illinois. It's not, I mean, they always have an advantage in any system, but the Illinois system really allows people with money to maximize the use of that resource in the political process. Mm.
Well, there's a section here where you explore various issues. We've already talked about gambling. There's another here that has, in my mind, has some currency because it deals with utility deregulation. In fact, we're going to talk about this tomorrow with a professor from the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, George Gross, who knows a lot about the subject, and talk about what's going to be happening in the state. And I think people are pretty concerned about it now because they've looked at what's happened in California with power shortages and rolling blackouts. And some people say, well, that's all about deregulation. And I think that's starting to make people here in the state of Illinois a little nervous and wonder what the effects of deregulation in this state are going to be. Has the move toward deregulation had something to do with power companies and their contributions to candidates?
Yeah, there's no question that when it became clear that we were going to deal with deregulation, that contributions, particularly from Commonwealth Edison and Illinois Power, went up. And so from, you know, maybe $150,000 worth of contributions from these kinds of public utilities involved with electricity in 1992, we went up to about $750,000, $774,000 in 1998 when we were in the process, 97-98, of passing the bill. Now, there were specific concerns that those, particularly Commonwealth Edison and Illinois Power, had involving what we were going to do with nuclear facilities and what was going to happen to what they called stranded costs, which were the construction costs involved with nuclear facilities that had been not nearly as productive, as good an economic investment, and whether those were going to be a burden on the people, the ratepayers, the people buying the electricity, or whether they were going to be a burden on the stockholders. So deregulation, you know, in terms of people making campaign contributions and this particular interest they were pursuing, you know, it was more narrowly in terms of that issue than the overall plan. Although I think the overall plan, and I'll certainly defer to George, is probably favors large companies and the public utilities over the residential consumer. So there was a clear pattern that when the issue heated up, the amount of money flowing in the General Assembly from people that had specific interests went up dramatically.
Well, probably we should move on to the sort of the second half